Okay, so you want to teach. And I look out there and I see a lot of master teachers. Okay, let me go on with this just a bit here. Okay, first of all, Martha asked me if I would do a talk for beginning teachers. And again, I see some people, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir here with Ken Juergen and Triple Horn, and I see several people. Anyway, how many have taught for more than 5 years? Okay, well, you guys can leave. All right. How many have taught for less than 5 years? How many have never taught at all? Oh, there's a couple of you I can talk to. Okay. Well, I teach at a community college, and so I'm going to kind of gear this at a very, very beginning level. The last four people we've hired at the community college have all had PhDs in various fields, and they end up teaching General Biology 101. All right, and so this is kind of, whether you're a beginning instructor, whether you're an assistant professor, whatever your title is, you're starting out, okay? You're just beginning. All right, and the theme for this year's ESA conference is beautiful for teaching, right? Innovation, initiative, and an influence. These are three primary things you're going to be doing as a teacher. I'm not going to take them necessarily in this order. To me, we do the initiative first. And then we do the innovation, and then finally we do the influence. And so I'll kind of go along in that theme. And following up on what Ken started with earlier here, role models. You are graduate students, or you've been through graduate school, and you've got all those wonderful teachers that you've had for mentors, you know, maybe it's high school or college, but you've got all those wonderful teachers you've had. And make a list of the things you like best about those teachers. And that is, I think, primary, as Ken mentioned earlier. List those positive qualities, the things you want to be able to do as you continue your educational endeavors. And while you're at it, you might make a list of some of the negative qualities as well. Don't do these again, right? Teaching is an art, as Martha's pointed out, perhaps. There is the educational theory behind it, and she's given you a wonderful background there. But we also have it may be some art as well. Attitude, enthusiasm, passion. This is what teaching is about. And if you have that passion for teaching, it's going to come across as you enter into this role as a teacher. Job or profession, what is it? If you're looking for a 9-to-5 paid job, oh, okay, I'm not sure you want to go into education, because it ends up not being quite 9-to-5. You need to make that commitment to students, and a lot of you also have a discipline, and you have your commitment to a discipline, and sometimes you can weave the two together, but as you're teaching, you need to make sure you have that commitment to your students. Make sure you're zeroing in on them first, all right? And they pick this up very, very well. But most of us do try to blend the two together, and we work on our discipline or our research, and we also have our teaching, but teaching is primary. If we look at my head title here, enjoy students. If you enjoy students and you respect the process of learning, all right, you will become a good teacher. We all know that teaching is contagious, or education is contagious, and we've been in group learning situations where if you can turn some students on, it'll inspire other students, and it becomes a contagious attitude. I mean, we find this in graduate school, you know, the competition, if nothing else. Maintain a sense of humor, all right? You have to, I can melt some students by just smiling. And I walk down the hall and they'll say later, "You're always smiling. Why are you always smiling?" I said, "Because I'm happy." And you can just melt students in that way. You're going around glum all the time. You don't belong in this area. You have to enjoy what you're doing. Okay, enjoy it. Respectful. Respect the students. Okay? If you respect them, they'll respect you. It becomes a mutual thing. I'll hit this again a little bit later. But respect is, I think, why you have those mentors up there, and why you learn to respect those, and why you pick those good qualities from those teachers. This was in Time magazine about 2 weeks ago. Did you see this? I had my talk already, but I had to go back and add this in. And what this was, if I can use the pointer here, and there it is. That's a happy face and a sad face. This was in the middle of the Time magazine, and they rated people here from the happiest people over in this area, and then they ranked them all the way down here, all the way around to this the people who were least happy. And this was not based on what their money they made. It's not money, okay? It's how happy they were in the profession they had, all right? And I'll jump forward here just a minute. Clergy ranked at 67.2. Post-secondary teachers, all the college-level teachers, ranked at 38.9. That's how happy, how many of them were happy? Gas station attendants were down at 13.2. Now you go back on this one. Okay, so here's the clergy way up here in the top. They were the happiest people they found in this survey. All right? Secondary school teachers, college agents, were right down about here. Okay? And, of course, the gas station attendants were up here. Now, this bothered me. This really bothered me. Because when you look at the clergy, two-thirds of them were happy or said they were happy at what they were doing. Only two-thirds? But then it was worse when you got to the college teachers. Only 4 out of 10 said they were happy at what they were doing. That's contagious, okay? And those people need to move on and find something else to do. I mean, you need to be happy at what you're doing. I mean, I've been at this business for 45 years plus, and I love it. I still, people ask me, when are you going to retire? I'm retirement age. When are you going to retire? I don't know. I'm still happy at what I'm doing. And if you're happy at what you're doing, you do it well. And the students sense this. And you can, it's so much easier to teach if you enjoy what you're doing, right? I see Dr. Triplehorn sitting here smiling, right? Okay. Anyway, if you looked at that rank that I had, that the time thing had there, secondary school teachers ranked right between dispatchers and secretaries in happiness. To me, that was really scary. That was really scary. Okay. Gas station attendants, 13%. I was surprised. 13% of them are happy what they're doing. Okay. Well, anyway, that was just kind of a thing about attitude and your enthusiasm and passion for teaching. Okay, so getting on to the meat of the topic, initiative, innovation, and influence. I'm going to do the initiative part first. All right? Before, you know, you may have a graduate degree and be the best ecologist in the world, and you know so much more than the freshman students coming in. You can't walk in the classroom the first day and think, okay, I know more than they do, so I can teach. No, you have to do some planning ahead of time. Okay, do some planning ahead of time. And I heard Dr. Juergen talk about the planning ahead of time. It may not look like their plan. I mean, sometimes you can have students help you with the planning. At least they think they're helping you. But you have that plan already in mind. You are organized. You have some organizational skills. So you've organized your class. You've organized your labs. You know what's going on. You know what you want the students to get out of the class. You've got some objectives that are in mind, okay? So you know what you want them to walk out of this classroom at the end. And whether this is a freshman biology class or if it's a graduate level, IPM class, you have those objectives, and you have to have the organization and the planning to go with it. So when we talk about the initiative, the very, very beginning documents, we come up with course policies for the course. And I'll go over these here in a minute. When you need to have a course syllabus, this is all that initiative planning before you ever start. And you should have some outcomes, some objectives, what you want the students to get out of this. It may be in rubrics, and I don't know if Martha's going to get into this later or not, but it's a way to measure the objectives that you have established. So, policies. Let's go with nuts and bolts 101. All right, this is what you need to do first in that planning stages. Vital information for the class. This sounds so elementary, but I've actually seen some beginning teachers walk in. Okay, what text are we going to use? Well, it's over in the bookstore. It's listed over there. If maybe you don't have a text, in writing. Put this policies in writing so you can hand it to the students and they've got it. It's like a contract then, right? And so they know exactly, okay, this is the text I'm going to use for the class. I know I need the 9th edition, not the 8th edition or the 7th edition. Or do you have handouts? Maybe you don't have a text, but you have that in your policy so they know what it is. You have your office hours in there. That sounds very elementary. Halfway through a quarter, I'll have a student come up and say, do you have office hours? By the way, where is your office? Okay. Look at the syllabus, all right? I even go over the policies with my freshman biology students. I go over the policies with them the first day, so make sure they have actually read this. Attendance. Do you have an attendance policy? If you do, it should be written in be written in your policy statement. How are you going to handle makeups? Students are going to have absences, illness, snow, not part of the country, we have snow breaks, okay, or funerals or illness or whatever. What is your policy on makeups? Have it written out so they know exactly what they have to do. They also really want to know your grading policy. Okay, are you going to curve this class? I always hit that. Are you going to curve the class? What is going to be an A? Well, how do I get a 4.0? Have something written out there so they know what percentages are converted to decimals or grades or whatever. And have your instructor contact information there. The phone number, your emails, or whatever. Some people don't like to give out phone numbers. Students find phone numbers. They really want to find you. Sometimes it's really nice to have it. I have that on all my handouts I give at the beginning of the quarter. So make it easy for students so they know what they want. Now, I know this is way beyond, that preliminary information Dr. Juergen talked about that you hand out the first day. But this is, and again, I'm aiming at these beginning students that, beginning teachers, okay, who are starting this. More stuff on that syllabus, the very beginning. A list of topics. Students like to know what we're going to cover for the quarter. All right, I've had students drop out the first day after they look at the syllabus. Okay, oh, this isn't the class I thought it was. All right, and possibly even tentative dates. On top of my schedule, I always write tentative because I can't always, be 3 weeks from now on the chapter I say I'm going to be on. So I say tentative schedule. I'll go as fast through these topics as you allow me. All right, or if you need to have more time, we'll go down. So tentative, but a list of topics is helpful. Include roughly exam and quiz schedules. They're unannounced quizzes, tell them you've got unannounced quizzes. Exam schedules, I'll say, okay, after the first three chapters, we're going to have a test. And so you have a rough, they know about what to plan for. Objectives, again, what you want the students to know. Tell them what you want them to know, all right? Don't assume that they're going to know this automatically. Due dates for papers, projects. These are always, it sounds so fundamental for those of us that have been teaching year after year, but it is important for beginning students to know this and to understand the objectives again for the course. So, nuts and bolts 101. Now, innovation. Going into the classroom, and some of the things that I have found that are important in beginning students, or for beginning teachers, and for those freshman students coming in, I've had students actually shake when they take like a lab science class. They're coming in like this, and they can't focus on the microscope. And you need to put those students at ease. One way I find that I put them at ease is to know their names. I teach in a quarter system, so I have 11 weeks with each of my classes. I have 75 students a quarter at a community college level, and I know the names of every student by the fourth day, then the first week. Not last names, but first names. And you call them by name, and it terrifies them. Oh my gosh, she knows who I am. And you'll hear them look at each other, she knows me. And that's good. You're establishing a rapport, you're establishing some respect. I also try to know something about each student. And it's wonderful. I mean, all my classes are lab classes, and so we have that walk around and visit with the students. And you find out if you've got a pre-med major, or if you've got an entomology student, or if you have an elementary school teacher. But you learn what their interests are. I've got five kids at home, or I'm coming back to school after 35 years. We have this wonderful blend of people in the community college system, and you get to know who they are. And then you also need to tell them about you. All right. I mean, you don't have to get personal with them, but you tell them, okay, yeah, I'm a mother. I've got two kids. I've got two grandkids. All right, and I drive 30 miles to work, 35 miles to work through the 4 feet of snow. No, I do commute 36 miles each way, and it's on slippery roads, and so I do expect you to be here. And if not, then I expect you to call me and tell me where you're at. But it's a way to establish this rapport or this respect with students. And I think this innovation thing in the first week is really, really important. It's all about establishing a mutual respect with your student. Okay? And they're antsy. I mean, they're coming in freshman. I know some of you are teaching only graduate level classes. That's altogether different because they're not quite so antsy. Oh, well, some of them are antsy, too. But freshman biology students really need to be led by the hand in some cases and be put at ease. All right. Review policies, review schedules. Again, butterflies in the stomach, whatever, they need to know these things. And at the very end of the talk, I have a list of things that I queried my freshman students this quarter when I knew I was going to give this talk. I said, what would you like to see in an ideal teacher? And I'll share that with you at the very, 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 very end. It's actually what I based the talk on. Okay. So, organization. We've already talked about the syllabus. Remember the organization. I keep hitting this word organization. Organization is crucial here. You've had that syllabus, you've got the policy statement, and you've done that ahead of time. Classroom activities, lecture, lab, field, you are organized, okay? You know what you're going into for the day. The class can be rather loose or it appears unstructured. You may want it to appear unstructured, but you know what you're trying to accomplish for that day. Organization on field trips. I take a four-day field trip. I take 50 students to the Olympic Peninsula for 4 days. And it takes some organization to get that kind of thing going. And organization is it. I mean, who can be more organized than an entomologist, right? Okay? I mean, science is organized, right? And you need to portray that in your everything you do in that classroom. Be organized because you want the student to be organized, right? And by your showing organization, it's going to foster that in the students. So, what are you going to teach? Make sure the students have the credentials for the class, all right? I teach a zoology class, and I assume the students have had biology 101, and I don't know how your registration process goes, but our students register for the next quarter halfway through the first quarter. And so sometimes, you know, the students will have registered for my zoology class. Biology is a prerequisite, so when they come into zoology, I expect them to know about the microscope and the cells and all the basic stuff we do in general biology. But they dropped out of biology halfway through the quarter, but they got in on the computer, right? So I see people shaking their heads, okay? So find out what they know. Find out, you know, if they've transferred in, did they ever have a microscope before? I mean, when I do invertebrate zoology, if they don't know what end of the microscope to look through, it's really difficult. And it's amazing. We have a lot of sciences that don't require a lab anymore in general biology. And so you have to know that your students are prepared for what you're about to teach them. We mentioned objectives earlier. I mean, you have course objectives where you tell the students what you want them to know when they get out of the course. And that may be the syllabus. But then you may also have chapter objectives. And some of our chapters in general biology, at least, are written. So, okay, we've got three things in this chapter, or two things, that you want to get out of this chapter, all right? And hit those again. Okay, these are the things that you should know when you get out of this chapter. I will be quizzing you on. There may be laboratory objectives. I have a list of objectives I give out with all my laboratory exercises, and we do roughly 16 labs in a quarter. And so they know exactly what they'll have to do for a lab exam, how many cells they have to identify, what kind of measurements they have to do, and so on. And there may be units. So develop your objectives so they know what they're going to be tested on, right? How are you going to teach? Well, class size makes a big difference here. I have one class this quarter of only 13 students. Oh, I don't teach that the way I teach my class of 50. And you can change your whole attitude. You still have the same objectives in mind, right? But you turn the whole class around and do it all together differently if you only have 13, almost becomes one-on-one, class of 50. I don't use the total inquiry approach, but even in class of 50 or 55, which are my lecture classes, you ask questions. You begin to ask questions, and you get this feedback constantly from the students. And this is a class of roughly 50, right? And it's amazing how much eye contact you can see. All of a sudden, you see that guy in the back row, and you're calling him, right? No, you know, I don't quite do that. But you can ask a lot of questions. I always start with some really simple questions that everybody can respond to, like, how many years have you taught, right? Okay? Or you say, well, how many of you have had breakfast this morning? Okay. And in a general biology class, that's great because that leads you right into your lecture on biochemistry, right? And then you can talk about ATP, in a molecule of lipid versus, or of triglyceride versus how many ATPs in a glucose and so on and so forth, or where that ATP is coming from. Constantly reviewing. I'm constantly going back on past chapters and bringing things forward. I can't talk about photosynthesis if they don't know about energy. Can't talk about photosynthesis if they don't know cell parts. And so we're constantly reviewing and going back to those areas, and that is reinforcement. And again, there's that objectives word again. There's that word organization again. All right. This is very critical, again, for your teaching skills here. Positive, or your influence, the third connection, right, from the ESA theme this year, a positive attitude towards students will lead a lot to how the students will respond to you if you have that very, very positive attitude. Let me put this really simple thing up there about returning papers on time. All right, if you're going to give a collect a paper, you should be able to collect it, correct it, and get it back to them within a day or two. Okay, that may be really strict if you've got a big paper, a class of 60, and you've got, you know, maybe not project papers, but daily, but other papers. I do two labs a week with 75 students, and I grade the lab the same night they do the lab and get it back to them next morning. They know exactly what they did right and wrong. I mean, I had a chemistry class where I got all my labs back the day before the final. That's disastrous. It shows no respect for the student. I'm sorry, I'm a little harsh here, but I'm really critical on getting those papers back to students on time. Influence, okay. Relate as much as you can to their real-world examples. This is what Martha has been stressing all along. And sometimes you have to really pull some ideas in here. This one always turns them on. Freshman biology students, right? They love human reproduction. Even animal reproduction is pretty good, exciting, okay? But you get to flower production and talk about megaspores and microspores, okay? So you talk about, okay, what are you going to give your significant other on her birthday or on Valentine's Day? The sexual organs of another organism, right? They usually think about flowers altogether differently at that point, okay? But it's a lead-in, okay? And it makes them help think about that a little bit. Okay, and of course the biochemistry, I already gave you my example for biochemistry. We talk about triglycerides and proteins and, you know, the phenylalanine little label in the back of your pop can, what does that mean, and so on. So relate as much as you can to your lectures, to something they can, as Martha has pointed out so graphically at the beginning, okay? Relevant activities. We've all had assignments, I think, which you think, well, why did the instructor give me that assignment? That was just to keep me busy. And students are really good these days at picking out busy work. Okay, don't give busy work. If it has a meaning, and again, I get a lot of freshman biology students at a community college level, many times at the community college because they didn't qualify to get into a university. All right, and so I have some students that don't have as many skills as some of your university students might have. And so I develop a lot of study guides, but they are relevant study guides. They are study guides that have direct relationship to the lectures we're giving and so forth. And so make sure that they are relevant. Sometimes I have to explain the relevance to it, okay? The relevance in this picture. I study ants in my research, okay? And those are baby ants, by the way, okay? In case you didn't understand the relevance there. All right. The categorization that Martha had at the end of that she skipped over very quickly, and I'm going to skip over too, but these are the levels of knowledge, okay, that you can have in your coursework or in your evaluation of students. Knowledge, of course, is the primary one. I know the definitions of these words, all right? Then comprehension, application. I do all of these in general biology 101, one quarter, okay? You can easily get up to that point of it. We do a little bit of analysis. And then, of course, we don't do as much synthesis and evaluation of data, but in some of my higher courses where we do have projects, we can do that too. But those are the levels, and that's a one little diagram, the back page of Martha's sheet is all on there, okay? Okay. Evaluation of student learning. They want to know what you're going to test them on. Tell them, all right? Tell them what you're going to test them on. It's not a big secret. Okay, and it shouldn't be a big secret. It's in the syllabus, it's in the objectives, it's in the chapter objectives or laboratory objectives or course objectives. So make sure that your evaluations kind of relate to that. I always tell my students, I'm going to give you some application questions. You may never have heard about this topic before, but if you know this, this, and this, you can apply what you know to this new situation. So it's kind of warn them that ahead of time, and it all works out. Sometimes you're called a nitpicker, you know, but whatever. And then the coin flips over, and the students evaluate you. And we have the community college level, at least we evaluate at least once a year, sometimes twice a year, all right? And for brand new teachers, we evaluate every single quarter with student evaluations. And this, our students get very used to telling it like it is. And so you hardly get any evaluation that have all ones down here and all sevens up here. Our scale actually goes from 1 to 7. All right, and so they, and it works out quite well. They can pick out a flyweight really easily, okay? And you'll hear them talk in the halls. Oh, yeah, I didn't learn anything in that class. And actually, they don't appreciate that, so they don't want to be that easy. And, of course, then you have those that tell you they sting like a wasp. Okay, what have I got, 5 minutes left? Okay, we're gonna hurry. I thought I was going to. This is the rank I told you about that I asked my students the first week of class. What do you want to see in an ideal teacher? I need to know this information for a talk I'm going to give later in the quarter. All right. Number one on their list, and I didn't give them I just gave them a blank paper, and they said organization. I want my teacher organized. That kind of surprised me. Okay. They want a policy statement. I want to see what I need to do for the course. They want a policy statement. They want a syllabus. They want a list of topics we're going to cover for the quarter. They wanted course objectives. All right? And they wanted the test material to be based on those objectives. Now, that was pretty good for college freshmen to come up with those ranks. My only other things in summary that I wanted to add to that was select traits from the best instructors. If we keep selecting traits from the best instructors, okay, hopefully we're going to get the best instructors out there, all right? And hopefully the happiest instructors out there. Learn from your past students, okay? And all of us that have taught for many years have learned. I've learned so much from my past students, okay? But most important, enjoy. Enjoy. Enjoy teaching. It's wonderful. Most gratifying thing I can do. I have to credit a lot of my cartoons to Paul Katz, who is deceased. And my artists are Sarah Alderette and Alderette and Janet, and of course these diagrams from other magazines. And I'd be glad to answer questions.